the last one, with first aid, so I think there is a problem. I'm looking into time. Do we have, sorry, do we have a copy? Have copies that we can, you make a presentation, and we, in fact, we are supposed to give us copies. So that as we are waiting for IT people, we look into the... Okay. We need not be advisable that while we are waiting for the IT person, whoever is going to make a presentation, we then have to, after we've done all the formalities, until the presentation is here, so we have to do a presentation, show the document, unfortunately. Are you okay? Okay, fine. I'm sorry. Honourable members, do you have your copies with you so that we then now start? Okay. There's an indication that members do have. In welcoming the Northern Cape, let's apologize for such change of time. It's a special beyond our control, but we're happy that you understood and you became patient. What we are going to do now, we will do the formalities, which are the households. Phones are put on silent, visitors don't ask questions, it's only members that are asking questions, it's only the presenters that are going to respond, and otherwise, for the benefit of those that may be coming for the first time, who are our visitors, not invited, formally invited guests, but those that just want to walk in, because a portfolio committee is a public. The public room, so we can't say people must not come, but just for the benefit of those that day. And everybody is going to introduce himself or herself using the mic, but we'll start with the honorable members. I'll start with myself. I am Linda Lloyd Gojoa, I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee on health. Next to the stream. There's Ms. Majalamba, who's the secretariat of the Ocean and Secretariat of the Committee. That's Moses Mutwabe, who's part of the research team. Lukuche, who is our content advisor, and Ms. Mari, who is also our committee assistant. I went over to the honorable members to introduce themselves. Then after that, you will tell us we are of the understanding that they're supposed to be here, led by the MC and the HOD and all other people, but you indicate who is the leader of the candidate. Thank you very much. Honorable members.
Thank you, Chairperson, and to repeat for the Chairperson, thank you for your patience. My name is Hanu Malmik and I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Health.
Thank you very much. My name is Vishnu Shabbat, I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Samana Ghosh, I'm a member of the committee.
Dr. Maishara, I'm a member of this committee.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My name is Labokang, the Senate Mosatine, and the MC for Health and the Mother. Thank you.
Good evening, Honorable Chairperson and members. My name is Elizabeth Wooden. I am the Head of Department for North Northern Cape.
Good evening, Chairperson and members. My name is Shanice Ruki. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Northern Gate Department of Health.
Good evening, honorable members. My name is Kaushik Ranjan. I'm Director of Policy and Planning, Northern Cape Department of Health.
Good evening, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Kaushik Ranjan. I'm the Chief Director of Corporate Services and Infrastructure.
Good evening, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Tarso Manyali. I'm the Senior Manager Supply Chain Manager in the department.
Good evening, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Jenny Madibuko. I'm the Chief Director responsible for the Chief Health Service.
Chairperson, honorable members, ABC colleagues. I'm Dr. Terence Carter, DDG, National Department of Health.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, honorable MC Health, Northern Cape, HMG colleagues from the Northern Cape, I'm Jeanette Hunter. I'm the DEG for Padre Healthcare at the National Department of Health.
Evening,
honorable members and chair, honorable MC and HOD of Northern Cape. Good evening, my name is Rania Rireni, Head of Public Services, National Health.
Hello, members. My name is Paul, Minister of Health.
Hello, members. This is Shane Rani Daimani from PMG.
I apologize for you coming earlier and later. My secretary was checking if I did the message. But I did, it was a situation beyond our control. So we are talking about it. Okay, no fine. NEC, you will be making a presentation. How you are going to make that presentation depends on you and your team. But you will, we are also assuming that you will shift a correspondence that said the question is to come in front of us and this. At the area of the PFM so we are handing over to you.
Good evening, one more chair. Thank you for the opportunity. Let me start by thanking the Portfolio Committee for affording us this opportunity to come and make a presentation on behalf of the Department of Health Knowledge. The HMD will do the presentation, but maybe what I just need to do, chair, is to say to this gathering that as a department we really take our responsibility very seriously. Obviously the word is really that we receive from the committee in terms of what areas we should cover. With emphasis on human resource infrastructure projects, as we all know, there are a lot of issues that took place in the past 3 years. Where, among other things, you have the improvement of quality of care services through your ideal clinic and official of health standards and compliance. You also have the introduction of work-based health services, school health services, district clinical specialist teams. All of these are what we can refer to as unfunded mandates. What becomes our responsibility as a department to ensure that we reprioritize whatever sources, be it financial or human, that we have to ensure that this becomes a reality. One example that one can cite, honorable chair, is that the committee is aware that recently the hospital of DR was handed over to us as a department by the Department of Public Health and Roads, which we have put a bit of a strain on our resources. Particularly given the fact that at times you will have this facility coming up, but not really getting range in terms of a budget. You know, instead you experience cuts from treasury. So, if you look in the presentation, that it will deliberate on, you will use the currency of Uganda as provided by that particular hospital, and also have a list again of new services which are very specialized that are to be given by the DR hospital. So all of this, despite the challenges that we have, we have taken a decision that we have to prioritize while lobbying national treasury and provincial treasury to give us funding, because for us to fully operationalize this hospital, firstly you will need the homebodies there that should do the work. But not only the homebodies, the homebodies that are committed to the cause. And also what you also need to is a lot of resources. But of course, if you have a lot of resources without committed individuals to the system, then it doesn't have any purpose. So it was good then that we need to strengthen your human resources and also your financial resources. One of the challenges that the presentation will speak to, particularly in the fact that it was requested from us, will be on your financial system. Strengthening of our financial system, because in our discussion as a province, as much as you can have a system, if you only have people who are full trained to use a system, then it's good or nothing. So those are some of the things that we'll be focusing on, we'll be bringing to your attention in the meeting, because of all the challenges that we have experienced, or that we are experiencing, or how we can see we can better deal with some of those challenges. In terms of time, I'll, with your permission, of course, hand over to my HOD, to the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'll jump into your presentation and also Malicious emphasize that I will not really read the presentations of either, but rather talk to it mostly. I hope members I will make sense, but obviously there will be an opportunity for questions. The presentation outlines NSC's the brief, as MC has indicated, which according to the invitation was to zoom in on the human resources status in the province, with a particular emphasis on community health workers. And then secondly, our infrastructure projects where we are at the Northern Cape Provincial Department of Health. Thirdly, financial management, particularly zooming in again on issues as the audit outcomes based on the statutory audit, and then supply chain management and procurement specifics, and then progress and challenges with regards to the IDEO clinic initiative. Human resources status in the Northern Cape, perhaps just for the current context, Honourable Chairperson and members, that our Northern Cape Executive Council has taken a decision that we must all cap our head count, obviously, but without impeding on critical service delivery and frontline services, and therefore prioritizing those critical and frontline service delivery folks for offering and therefore a situation where all of us must then have submitted what we deem as critical frontline service delivery posts for Premier to approve in consultation with our provincial treasury, that's also in line, I think, with the national directive as the minister just speech earlier on. Because all of us are expected to remain within budget with regards to compensation of employees, but obviously putting the patient at the center of our services and therefore prioritizing those costs. And therefore, Honourable Chairperson, we then, in trying to give a perspective of where we are at in terms of human resources, we have indicated what is our current situation as at the end of August when we prepare the presentation against the last financial year, and distinguishing between what would be clinical and non-clinical or admin support. And that is basically the picture on about Chairperson, as we note, that at August 2016, we're sitting with minus 53 clinical posts if we compare our CRs with the previous financial year. And then non-clinical, we have a plus 4, and overall then in terms of the total staff establishment as at August 2016, 6,735. And then the percentages, Chairperson, as you would also note again, the bulk of our staff sits within the clinical establishment versus at 66% versus non-clinical, and you would see that the reduction in the number of posts, which in the main honorable chairperson would relate to those posts that we are struggling to retain, mostly the specialist types at the Northern Cape. It's one of the serious challenges that we have to attract and retain our specialists, especially our medical officers and so on. So that would be in the main the area that we really struggle in Chairperson. We also have started with a parallel cleanup on our Chairperson in line with the Executive Council Directive or Resolution, where we would have brought into adjustment all our appointments on our system. And as at the 1st of July, we managed to, or at the 1st of July, we had 488 appointments that were out of adjustment, meaning therefore that they were not sitting against an approved book on our establishment. And as at the August 2016, we can report on the procedures that we have managed to allocate those out of adjustment books. Against a funded post on our establishment. We also went ahead, Honourable Chairperson and members, in line with the GPSA directive, to abolish those posts on our establishment that are funded, that are vacant and unfunded, a number of 1,616 posts. That we removed from our establishment and all that. What it means, Chairperson, we had also to consider carefully that we, instead of moving where we have basically undertaken a prioritization with regard to which posts to abolish. So most of the posts that have been abolished would be mainly support posts rather than our critical service delivery posts. So where we would have had, for instance, a funded post that would not be a critical post, and we would have had an unfunded post, a vacant post that we deem to be a critical post, we would have traded off the critical post for the non-critical post, such that in the end we then abolish the non-critical post for the critical post. So in the end, basically we have gone through a process of sifting really out what we deem to be our critical post, and sifting at this point in time with 704 such posts which we have prioritized now for filling. Chairperson, going forward. The challenge obviously is always whether we have the money for these posts. Chairperson, then on the next slide, we give a reflection of our vacancies in terms of our critical human capital, which would be our health professionals. We have the 477 out of the 704 that are health professionals, and then we would have admin and support,
227, and that we speak normally, the critical ones like the cleaners at clinics, admin clubs for clinics, etc., etc., those that we really deem are critical service delivery related problems supporting us to achieve also our ideal clinic and deal with non-negotiable of cleanliness. Then the training interventions, Honorable Chairperson, and country, we have the Mandela Castro Human Scholarship Program, which we have expanded over the past couple of years. And Chairperson is sitting with a total of 205 students that we have taken through this program, some of them obviously still in the program as we speak, across all districts, 5 districts within our province, as you would see in the slide. We can also report, Honorable Chairperson, that so far we have managed to turn out 33 doctors from that Cuban program who are in the province working as we speak. Then other training interventions, Chairperson, are there, various fields of study, specifically to our mandate. Also, as you can see, quite a significant number of people that we are trying to support, mainly through our bursaries and grant funding, on the two slides. So in total, Chairperson, you would note that we have, as at the end of July, 159 across the board compared to 218 in 2015-16. And the difference basically would be those graduates that would have completed and are elsewhere deployed, either in the province or elsewhere in the country. Then it is also important, Chairperson, that we then flag the community health workers as per your brief, Honorable Chairperson. The Department of Health in the Northern Cape works with different community health care workers, ranging from home-based caregivers, TB tracer teams, peer educators like counselors, and then also a cohort of retired nurses who would serve as team leaders, especially as thanks to the workers' outreach team. And then, Chairperson, I know there is an outcry nationally, and we've seen also during the recent AIDS conference that there is an outcry for us to absorb community healthcare workers. Unfortunate stumbling block in that regard would be the budget availability, because we have a projected budget at 485 million that we will need if we need to employ the current cohort of 2,592 CHWs at level 3. Now, that is a process that is at a national level. Chairperson, one can report that basically undertaking an exercise whereby we are trying to see how best can we come up with a strategy for us to employ. Obviously, we will need the assistance of National Treasury in this regard. It's an ongoing process spearheaded by the National Department of Health. The next slide, Chairperson, speaks to the breakdown of our community health workers and NGOs, who really is our source base for these traders per district again. And then, Chairperson, you can see we have these 2,592 leaders spread across 30 NGOs, and then we have 56 retired nurses, as per my earlier mark, who serves them as the team leader. On the basis of the funding difficulties, Chairperson, of budgetary pressures, It is at this point in time very difficult for us to even think about absorbing the community healthcare workers, and for the foreseeable future, we will continue to employ them through the NGOs, chairperson. And we have a, and we can then mention, chairperson, that we pay a stipend of around 2,500 per community healthcare worker, and that is the budget basically of 97 million per annum that we spend on community healthcare workers. A very critical output of our community healthcare workers at the point in time, and basically in line with the shift, primary healthcare re-engineering from home-based to ward-based services, is to anchor really our waters outreach team, and relate to household assessments, provide our information, support chronic patients, and so on and so forth. And also assist with the CCMDD, which is a chronic medication dispensing and distribution processes in certain areas. In the Pixikasene district, which is the NHI pilot site, all 38 wards are covered with ward-based teams, and therefore our workers, they really assisting us in that regard. And obviously with this, Chairperson comes also, Honorable Chairperson comes training, and therefore it is an important element of our preparation also of our community healthcare workers for absorption is obviously the training component. And I think that is an ongoing process, not only in the pilot site, NHI pilot site, but also in all other sites, Chairperson. And we have pictures that vary dark now, but just to give you a sense of some of our work, the teams, and then also the training on electronic data capturing, among others, that we have conducted and undertaken with our teams. Chairperson, then the infrastructure projects. For the first quarter, our expenditure stands at 17.6%, if I can round it off, Chairperson. The projected expenditure, or the norm would be at 29%, from our health facility revitalization grant, which really anchors all our infrastructure projects. The deviation there is as a result of the mental health hospital project payment, Chairperson, of 56 million as July 2016, that we were not able to pay because of certain challenges, and the National Department of Health was holding approval for us to pay from this time. But we are in the process, Chairperson, of addressing those challenges between ourselves, National Treasury, Provincial Treasury, as well as National Department of Health, and there soon we will be able to begin to move. We must say that the project is progressing very well, and we have also some pictures that we'll share with honorable members going forward. The complete project, the UTR hospital that NEC has alluded to, has been handed over to us at the Department of Health, and is ready to be operationalized, and Chairperson, provided that we receive some form of funding, because we're already in the narrow after having reprioritized extensively as a department. The other projects that are completed is the upgrading of the 36-bed mental health unit, which also is ready to operationalize, Chairperson, and we targeted to operationalize by October 2016 in commemorating and celebrating Mental Health Month. In this regard, it would be a major achievement for the province.
Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, both involved and able to, for the first time ever, as the department take full responsibility for state patients who are currently in custody in correctional facilities. So that is one that my corporate we must just make sure that it happens, and that's part of the pre-prioritization that we're speaking about, and that some of the unfunded mandates that comes with expansion of services sometimes. Then the EMS station in Kalsnia have also been upgraded, and then a couple of our clinics and hospitals and community health centers. We have also upgraded fencing and guard houses, and that's part of our ideal clinic initiative time, Chairperson touching that. Then just a brief status of the momentum of our health hospital, as we have indicated. The elephant in the room, even bit by bit, has reached 87% physical completion. And the current activities really just realize around specialized work, among others, flooring, painting, heating, landscaping, etc. Chairperson, again, Dr. Mabona will say some of the pictures just to give a sense to the honorable members that indeed there's good progress that we have made with this facility. And we're projecting as the final completion, fiscal completion date, July 27, hopefully next year this time we'll begin to speak operationalization on the chamber. Then we have the detail of other infrastructure projects that are at varying stages, ranging from planning, some in construction, and so on and so forth. I would not go through them individually, Chairperson, but as you can see, as the Northern Cape, we're very busy. And most of these facilities or the infrastructure projects, Chairperson is zooming in on ideal clinic gaps because we really striving to achieve set timelines by National Health Council. There's quite a number of those citizens. Then we get into the financial management, and I think the question was that we zoom in on specifically our audit outcomes. Chairperson, we have received regrettably another qualified order opinion on a number of qualifying paragraphs, movable tangible assets and also intangible assets, accrual in payables, accrued departmental revenue commitments and irregular expenditure on a chairperson. Now, the reality of the matter is that chairperson, honorable chairperson, we have had a change in our leadership. I was specifically seconded from the office of the premier, together with a new team, including the CFO and some of the team members that are here. And the specific brief was to turn the corner, make sure that we turn the corner with regard to audit outcomes at the Department of Health, but also other service delivery matters. So our head is on block, honorable chairperson, and it is a tall order, but as MC has indicated, we are really committed under his leadership to really see how best can we come in and assist the turnaround in the department. Not all is gloomy. Honorable chairperson, there has been improvement, the number of qualifying paragraphs has reduced a bit, I think from 8 to 5 now, which means there is progress in the right direction as we speak, and it's just for us to push on to the wheel and really do a little bit of work. Chairperson, as you have indicated on tangible assets, the whole issue, really the root of the problem is actually the completeness of our asset register, which is really not existing. And the big thing for us is really now to consolidate and put this asset register together, and with assistance of Commercial Treasury as well as the National Department of Health. We have actually started already in terms of verifying and logging our mobile assets onto Locus, which is a system that also has been implemented by the department already a long time ago, as the Treasury Director also. We also busy with locating supporting documentation for all assets, because that is also a challenge. And then there's a lot of redundant assets that we need to dispose of. And then obviously the difficult one is to investigate then as it was an asset when we pick it up on a purchase. As indicated, National Department of Health and Provincial Treasury obviously have been engaged to come on board and assist the department. Then on accruals and payables, Honourable Chairperson, we can report that our accruals at this point in time are standing at about 450 million rand. A very challenging situation for the department, because really we're struggling to make ends meet in the face of cash flow problems. But yes, it may be not lamenting. We're putting our best foot forward. We are engaging the Department of Finance or Provincial Treasury to come on board and see how best can we together then come up with a strategy to really pay off our accruals. Ours is really to make sure that we address the accrual situation by the end of the financial year, Chairperson. And then that will obviously come with serious introduction of cost containment, further cutting to the bone, and identifying leakages and so on, revisiting all contractual commitments and obligations and so on, and really just zooming in on those that are unnecessary for us to terminate and to make sure that we loosen up money, because everything that we can loosen up and save for us is money that can go into those critical policy shifts, as NCA said, that speak to the heart of what the mandate is of the Department of Health. With regards to the revenue, Honourable Chairperson, and also an area which we need to come up with improvement strategies. The big issue there is patient record management, poor internal controls over patient files, reporting and recovery of patient fees, especially those patients that are able to pay on a Chairperson. It's very difficult for us to track those that have medical aids that we are able to then that we are then able to claim from those medical aids and really be able to account for the revenue that accrues to the department. The shortage of staff and obviously the competencies of staff that also includes attitude and in some aspects, Honourable Chairperson, are only areas that we have picked up, and we are in the process of reviewing our controls in terms of patient record keeping, testing the staff capacity with the intention to build capacity where necessary through training, and also Chairperson, I think the biggest issue is then be the systems, IT systems that we need. We had as early as yesterday engaged National Treasury thank CETA, and they have acceded to a very shortened process for us to really procure a patient administration system that will basically also be of great assistance in this area in us dealing with this qualification. Then our commitment, Jefferson, the incompleteness of our commitment is the biggest issue that led us to having this qualification setting. The big thing also there is that all our contractual obligations basically at this point in time in that almost all contracts have expired. And then, Honorable Chairperson, our litigation based on medical legal claims, legal fees, and then obviously the Cuban program that we never really as a province have received any funding for, and that we must basically cover now from our Ecuador share. We are owing the National Department of Health an amount of say 50 million for the fees, the current commitment to the Cuban students that are currently in Cuba, Honorable Chairperson. And those are challenges that we're sitting with. As I indicated, ours has been a Chairperson since we came into the department together with the NEC to really work on sifting through what is there to make assessment and to evaluate what is feasible, what is legitimate, what can be validated, and so on and so forth, because we also picking up that there's a lot of those commitments that can really not be explained or even justified. So we can't validate that, and before we pay, and that is basically one of the big challenges in the department. And then also the tenders, Honorable Chairperson, in terms of contracts that are expired, like I said, we will then also prioritize those critical contracts or services that we will then go out on tender for us to regularize. Obviously, with this also comes in investigations, because we must also deal with issues of irregularity around contracts where they are such. Obviously, Provincial Treasury is our biggest ally now, Jefferson, and we have already engaged and we are in agreement that they will be assisting us. Irregular expenditure also the elephant in the room. In the financial statements, we have a disclosed figure of over 700, almost 800 million in irregular expenditure, Honorable Chairperson, with fruitless and wasteful disclosed at 4 million, also 5 million, and unauthorized at 123 million. Again, here, controls with irregular, in the main, non-compliant to policy prescripts. With that comes the investigation, basically such that there can be consequence management where necessary, and then obviously also corrective intervention in holding accountable those that are responsible for such. National Department of Health and Treasury, Honorable Chairperson, our allies in us addressing the area of qualification. Then with regards to supply chain, I think the main thing, as I said, is the impunity with regards to failing to comply with the prescripts, Honorable Chairperson, and process. Our whole practice, supply chain management practice in the department is currently the subject of a complete overhaul under the leadership of the CFO and Ms. Monani, who is here in this room today. Most of our payments exceed 30 days. We are carrying, we actually the course of the province of Northern Cape also consistently receiving the flag, because health care is really the bulk of the government that has been the delay. It is also something that we're working on, Honourable Chairperson, but when does come, obviously, our efforts to deal with the accruals, because that will continuously put us in a position where we just fail to meet the delay. But we have started working backwards, Honourable Chairperson and members, because we don't want to add onto our batch of non-payment within 30 days. So we trying to work from the new back to the oldest. They are already, those ones that already exceeded, we really not zooming in on them too much, but we trying to prevent us losing more and more onto, so we zooming in on the newest or the latest payments. We in the process of developing service standards, SOPs, and so on. Honourable Chairperson, implementing controls, training, Honourable Chairperson, especially in terms of National Treasury instruction notes, because those are areas where normally we would not comply if you are not keeping abreast of developments in the supply chain environment that is really a dynamic environment from a treasury perspective. And then obviously our procurement to be done through the system that is, because this system will also help us, because once you procure on logos, especially like your asset, immediately your asset register is updated at the same time. So you're really hitting two birds with one stone. Again, Chairperson, I think one area also that we're zooming in on is the inventory management system over pharmaceuticals, which is one area I think nationally that we're all struggling with. Then the last area, Honourable Chairperson, according to the brief, is the Ideal Clinic Initiative and the realization thereof. How are we doing in the Northern Cape? Ideal Clinic Initiative for us is very critical in the context of the National Health Insurance, as particularly the primary intervention in our preparation and our working towards readiness for NHI. And therefore, in pursuit of the National Health Council directive that by April, by March 2018, we must have reached ideal status in all clinics in the province. So we have basically 3 years starting last year, Honourable Chairperson. And the purposes of the Northern Cape in this year, 2016-17, we have 36 facilities that by the end of March in the pilot site, which is Pixita Center, that needs to be IG. 36 facilities. And then 30 facilities have additionally also identified across the province in all other districts for us to simultaneously pursue ideal status within this current financial year. A baseline assessment was already conducted on all our facilities and Honourable Chairperson, across the board we achieved an average of 56% with regards to ideal centers. And we are in the process really of identifying those areas that we term as quick wins for us to meet our target at the end of this year around the 6 and facility. We can report on our Chairperson and members that as we speak of the 36 facilities in the pilot site, we have already achieved ideal status in Bristol, Maryland, and Hope Town Clinic, and three clinics so far. We are saying 9 facilities have already attained over 70%, and those are the 9 that we hope that within the next couple of months, 2 to 3 months, we will really be zooming in on those ones that we can attain ideal there. And some of them, Honorable Chairperson, are really very close. The challenge normally is where infrastructure challenges, you know, the clinic being old and dilapidated and therefore needing more work that really is hampering our progress in the main. But again, like you said, where we can, we really optimizing the revitalization grant to upgrade our facilities to be compliant. And then on the addition of 30 elsewhere in other districts, we can report that Alexander Bay Clinic and the Alexander Bay CHC obtained the ideal clinic status last year. But this year, apparently, there was one new area item or requirement that was introduced that relates to pediatrics, and it's that one that basically for now we have to attend to, but we have already procured the tape. I'm told it's a type of a tape that must be procured for those clinics for them to retain their ideal clinic status. And then 29 of overall out of our 66 facilities across the province that we have earmarked for 2016-17 are about 70% ideal capacity. So we are well on our way. The next slide really is just graphics of really just explaining what I said earlier on. So I will not really get into the graphics, and I just want to a little bit stop at our challenges, because that was part of the brief. What are our challenges in terms of achieving ideal clinic status across all our facilities? I think the key one is the inadequate budget, the standing one, but like we say, again, we are trying to look into what grants we have available, and that's where the National Department of Health is coming in, Honorable Chairperson, to assist us to identify those grants where we can really optimize those grants for purposes of addressing some of the challenges, budget-related challenges with regards to the initiative. And then the lack of vital equipment, Honorable Chairperson. Again, there, we are in the procurement process. For us, within the next week, 2 weeks, we will be receiving our supplies that will put most of our clinics now right there where we want them to be. Infrastructure challenges, I think I've already spoken about that, Honorable Chairperson. It is a challenge sometimes when you have infrastructure that is just not suitable to have been clinic in the first place. And then human resources, Honorable Chairperson, again, like I said earlier on, prioritize the critical of the critical, but the reality of the matter is the need is so serious and so dire and desperate that we will have to have additional funding coming in from somewhere. We can, however, report in a manner of putting effort to alleviating the administrative burden from the our clinical staff at clinic level. We can report that we have appointed now 165 admin clerks who have been placed now at our clinic for alleviating that burden from our nurses and so on. And then security services is also very key element of ideal status. We are currently in the process of evaluating our security situation at facilities. And as indicated, some of the fencing, Honorable Chairperson, but also in terms of warm bodies, the contract and so on, and making sure that we have the right numbers. But also the option of IT. We can source that electronic security mode at some of our facilities. Then there's other complementing initiatives that we thought we need to flag. Oliver Jefferson that speaks to the ideal clinic in terms of the improved patient experience at the clinic, which The first one is the Central Chronic Medication Dispensing and Distribution Program, the CCMDD, where we have rolled out in the Pixley pilot site in the main, and we have almost 10,000 patients already on this a program whereby they don't have to go to the clinic so frequently just to get medication. It's once in 6 months, and the medication is delivered to their doorstep or somewhere where they can access it. That is the improved patient experience that we're speaking about, honorable chairperson. And we have also started with a rollout to other areas. Then obviously the next one is the health patient registration system. Again, a situation that we think is a very important element of improvement of our patient experience, basically allowing our patients to come in at the dedicated time rather than sitting in queues all the time and so on and so forth. And I know it's a paradigm shift in the mind of our people. They're still coming to the clinic and not really fully utilized, and we therefore banking on this August committee members also when we go out there into our constituencies just to educate our communities about this initiative by the Department of Health that seeks to improve their experiences and make sure that we render a better service to them. So we have rolled out this health registration system, also especially in our NHI pilot site, but also in the process of rolling out throughout the we have three districts that we have earmarked now, Air Francis Bar and JTG for this year, and the team from National has given me the assurance that they might also just start with Namakwa as well in this financial year. And on the project person, that is the impact of these initiatives, as I'm saying, very beautiful, shorter waiting times, improved patient satisfaction in terms of the turnaround of our service, less medicine stock out. And for that one also, we must thank on the project person. We are in the process also of, in fact, we have already started the rollout of the stock visibility system, which is a system which tracks also the stock levels, drug stock levels at our facilities, again to make sure that we reduce the stock out and shortages at that level. And then the integrated services at the clinic level, and then the letter congestion as all the decanting as they normally said of our clinical facilities. Thank you very much, Chairperson. So I need to conclude.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Chairperson and committee members. Chair, the representation is very clear that as a province we are really trying to close all the gaps, you know. And we really appreciate the fact that we are here today. The committee will advise us on some of the challenges that we are really experiencing, also where we are deemed to be weak. We are open to the committee coming up strong on us in terms of what they believe can be done to improve the situation. Because what we stand for in terms of what we have said for ourselves is a long and healthy life for all, and to make sure that the end team find expression among communities that serve, and also to ensure that they see access to our facilities by community members, and the presentation, ensure that we improve or the experience, you know, for the better of our patients, for the better. We are very optimistic, like you said. By the way, the reason why we are so optimistic about the turnaround in the department is due to the fact that we did, upon my appointment in April, I saw the intervention of the Premier to give the people who were really assisting turning around the financial situation in the department. And we given a chance again in the near future, we will have a lot to report on, which is very positive. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, MC, and any questions?
Thank you. Just for the light and loose, I'm not sure if it's only light and loose. If you remember, say, in one of our control committee meetings, there was one member of the EFF who used to always complain that there's a whole prison in Kimberley where blood is coming from the hospital running through the streets of where Kimberley is. Every time that member is there, we're wondering, whether can that be possible? And as I was listening to your presentation, I thought maybe you made mention of a hospital where the blood coming from the hospital where running through the streets of Kimberley. But maybe let's comment in terms of the progress that they have made. Just that some of the achievements on the slides are forgotten about them. And I've got two questions here. Maybe some of the questions they have responded to, they will say that. My three questions are, what are the implications of the 1,750 people that we have abolished? And that's regarding community health care workers. What was the total budget for training intervention for 2014-15 financial year? Was the department not employing community health care workers directly, not through NGOs? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you also for the presentation. I just have two questions. The first is with regards to human resources, to follow on my colleague, Honourable Dow. The HOD mentioned, obviously, the freezing of posts, additional posts that were supportive but not critical. The challenge we have is that every post in healthcare is actually critical. You either be interested in porters, staffs, cleaners, but not porters and cleaners, like you run operating theatres. We can say admin staff as support, but how can you run outpatient departments without having admin props to assist with patient props? So it seems like a very impossible burden call. Now, when we had a presentation this morning from the Eastern Cape, Dr. Imran Gashin, who is the HOD for the Eastern Cape, explained to us how they went about resolving these kind of issues, and they had a very detailed continuous approach where they used margin, example, which I think supported the national department, I'd assume, and we're able to map out what the needs were, so they wouldn't have to make those decisions as to what is important and not important because of rising and within that information. So the question I have is, has any exercise like that been done in the Northern Cape? Because that should be able to then identify what's important in terms of mapping out human resources. The second question I have is a little bit of a very serious one. Northern Cape, of course, is a very vast province. It has remote facilities, large areas of land, and hard to reach communities in terms of access. And I know that even in the infrastructure projects, you speak about access around Kimberley Memorial Hospital, for example, as being an important thing for EMS. Now, against the background, keeping with EMS, you want to ensure that those who are in critical condition can be reached very quickly. And so, therefore, your air ambulance services are important. Now, earlier this year, I asked a question to the minister, a written question, asking specifically about air ambulance services. And I asked what the expenditure was. I asked whether third parties being used, and then asked if services, in fact, are operational. The responses are not very concerning, such that I'm actually in the process of asking the minister a follow-up question. because, and he, in all fairness, said that this is what the Northern Cape problem is about for me, and this is not from you. And firstly, there was no data that could be sourced for 2012 and 2013 financial year for air ambulances in the written question. And then the next year, I think it was 14 million rand, and then 12 million rand, and last year, from March, it was 10 million rand. So we talk about a large amount of money given your entire budget, but no data could be sourced for financial expenditure for 2012 and 2013. Secondly, the answer said no third parties were used, but then the last answer is Aerocare's been used, which is my understanding of the body. So that's contradictory. And then the question was, are air ambulance services operational? And the answer was yes. This is an airport here. But one of the values we have as a committee that the chair often speaks about is we actually go and see something on the ground. And when we contact the people, when I contacted personally somebody, people on the ground, the information I remember was in fact there was huge interruptions in the air ambulance services, which wasn't what answers here. So as I said, I have asked the question, follow-up questions in process. But I thought in fairness, because you are here today, I'd really like to get a response on these questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Firstly, I would want to welcome the presentation. It was direct short to the point. However, there are issues one would want to raise with you. Firstly, with regard to the employment of the community health workers, is there a reason or is it a condition that you employ them through NGOs? Why are you not doing it as husband? Also, are you planning to employ them on a permanent basis in the future? Are they also manageable, considering the expansion level of your project? Are they manageable? Are you able to get the calls? How are you supporting them to reach that particular area since how your project is created? The other issue on infrastructure charity, I would want to raise there. Are all your completed projects functional? Do they have human resources and equipment? And as we are speaking now, service being rendered to the community. On finance, on an authorized expenditure, are there some measures in place to ensure that it does not recur in future? If yes, what are those measures? Can you please explain? Then the other issue, the majority of your payments exceed the 30 days, and you are planning to pay within the required period. What makes you think you will be able to manage to do that? What was the challenge before? And what is your general strategy that tells you that now you'll be able to perform within the required period of 30 days? And lastly, with regard to an IDC, you are planning to have completed the implementation by 2018. So what is the overall percentage as of now that has been implemented? As was speaking, the overall percentage. You have mentioned percentage, but you never indicated the overall percentage since you started. And so that we'll be able to know as to what we have informed you that by April 18th you have completed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to ask a few questions here. Maybe we get a clearer idea of what it is all about in the Northern Cape. Does the department have schools that are funded by international donors? If so, what is the percentage of these schools, and how will the absorption of these schools affect the department's budget? Question number two, what are the implications of the 1660 posts that are abolished for quality healthcare services in the province? there are 1,616 proposed that have been abolished, how they affect the cultural service in the province. What is the mobility of the health CAWs, considering that you've got the vast territory? How do they move around? Are they even bicycles, or are they driven around, chauffeurs driven around, or they walk? So that's the thing. What are the changes causing the health facilities to struggle to reach the platinum weighting in the NHI facilities? What support is given to facilities to assist them to attain the platinum weighting? And to what extent is the vacancy rate affecting the clinical initiatives? How many of the target health facilities have facility managers to drive the implementation of the ideal clinic initiative? How is the moratorium on employment affecting quality service in the health facility, considering that there are about 477 vacancies in the professional health facility? So if there is a moratorium on employment and you have 16 vacancies, and there are vacancies in the health professionals of a magnitude of 477, how does this tally? How does it complement? And of course, there are also vacancies for 227 support staff. It looks like all your infrastructure projects are at the planning stage. Only more than 60%. How come they are all at the planning stage at the same time? That means, does it mean you waited until you've got a whole lot of them and then started planning them at the same time? Thank you.
No, thanks very much, Chair. I'll just go to the community advocates. And just quickly, just want to check, since this community advocates are employed for an NGO, how do you monitor their performance and ensure that it's fair for money? And what are the cost implications? Are you saying is it more costly for them to have been directly contracted without meeting the person? Was it going to be much more expensive to contract them directly instead of using a meeting person? And if it was going to be costly, how costly was it going to be if there was no person in the meeting? Just contract them, pay the amount that you're paying them. We're not going to save money. So let's just get a clarity around that area as well. And what are the conditions of service for these community health workers, since they are not directly employed themselves? And what are the benefits, if there is any benefits for these community health workers? And then you say you've got about 204, 5, I don't remember exactly, wards
850. Yeah. Somewhere in the 200 something odd towards in the Northern Cape. How many already have teams, white base teams, thus far? And is it part of the amount, the 97 million, or part of those that are with the NGO, or there is a separate arrangement with them, or they are integrated and part of them? Or is one, if they are not part, how do you relate the two in terms of making sure that there is no duplications of work? How do they complement one another in the performance of the duties on the ground within the context of this re-engineering of primary healthcare? And then coming to financial management, the qualifications. One of the issues that the AG raised, which is a reputation we've qualified last time because of the regulars, now it's still the same issue of property infrastructure, but which is movable in a movable assets, the issue of complex, the same in the previous years. And the main issue that the ordinary raised as the root cause. One of them is leadership. I don't see, not sure whether this movement, leadership, senior management level, leadership at the political level, I'm not sure whether this movement that has been done is beginning to address that. But I'm not sure whether it is, because the issue that was raised in the fact that as a root cause. Slow response on all these issues by senior management. I don't see how you are saying you're going to deal with that area. Or this restructuring is beginning to address that, I'm not sure. The other issue is about inadequate consequences for poor management and transgression. Because you can't keep on shifting people without any consequences. Where are those people that created this mess? As you speak, where are they? Because there must be consequences for that. And then the other one, it says it's vacancy in key management positions which create a lot of instability in the department. Can you begin to address that problem as well? So that you are able to then, as you put up this plan, because you can put this plan, if you don't have commitment on the part of senior management, you don't have that senior management, bottom is in the place, that plan is not going to implement itself. It will require a commitment on the part of the management. Do you have that? Looking at your accruals, the budget and all, in a sense the department is financially not sustainable. It broke as it has. Department is broke. How I hear it as saying, you know, the cost containment, the measures, I'm not sure how I'm going to do that in the health sector. Cost containment in the health sector. Can you give us some examples of what cost containment they're going to be embarking upon, which is not going to compromise census delivery at the end of the day? Which are those cost containment measures that are going to be embarked upon? We're not going to compromise service delivery because they're going to get the necessary service that is required. Because we don't want a situation where you're saying you're solving a problem and creating more political problems. Dealing with them, trying to deal with the administrative problem.
expenditure. I'm not sure whether Public Health will be able to convince them to authorize it, charge it to Professor Treasurer and all those things. So how are you going to manage that? I don't get clear very. I don't get to the level that one can probably say is now going out here. We are convinced that you are going to turn the corner. Thank you.
All right. The association, we are not going to have a break because of time. As you know, we spoke to questions everything. We then be able to direct the response according to the leadership of the I feel that's a sign of the members because it's quite late in the day. So whoever wants to start is fine, as long as they're both the sponsor.
Then Chair, I think we should start with the financial aspect of much that they should go to them.
With regards to the presentation and our budget, our training budget is between 1 million and the chief budget is between 2 million. So in total, about 3 million is our total budget and training allocation. In regards to an organized expenditure, the department acknowledges that because of the fact that we have the legacy accrual, and the fact that we always had a shortage of cash flow, it culminated in recurrence of irregular and unauthorized expenditure. But one thing we must also acknowledge is that, as the AU said, it was leadership and it was enforcing internal controls, making sure that everybody is held accountable and everyone takes responsibility for the budget allocation to make sure that we spend within how much we have and nothing more than that. What we have done now is that we have centralized our procurement processes to the provincial office. We've given delegations to district and hospitals to these small amounts. But going forward, because of the centralization of the procurement, we'll be able to buy in bulk and give out discounts. But we're also able to manage our spending so that we make sure that we can control how much we spend and then the goods and services are distributed from there. Our budget control in place, which is, as I've been in place for you, that we've implemented what we call a pre-approval system. So the budgets are allocated, and each manager will be given an as-given year's budget to our cost center. Before any spending happens, our budget unit actually checks to see that there are funds available within that budget allocation within that cost center. So a requisition will come through. Our officials request the quotations, and then the cost of the goods are considered, and then management accounting will say, yes, you may budget the funds, or no, you may let the citizen funds. So we look to see that our expenditure happens in the guilty responsibilities and objectives that the items are used, and if we even let them, we begin to reprioritize in items. So it's really our control to begin and organize and expenditure is the centralization, that's the actual managing the budget per item from our provincial office and from our management accounting unit. The last payment in excess of 3 days, this is really our challenge because we have the number of payments that have been outstanding for longer than 30 days. And with that request, which aligns with the people who request the provincial trade sheets, they give us a cash advance so that we can pay off the debt that's currently outstanding because we want to move forward on a clean slate. The control that we put in place is that we have a tracking system where from the day the requisition is received in our supply chain unit, we record that requisition because we also check efficiency of ourselves. So we check the efficiency from the day the requisition is received to the day the orders are, the quotations are requested, the day the order is issued, the day the goods are delivered, the day the invoice is received, and we confirm that we have decided the delivery of goods. And within the mental health service caregiver staff, you have 5 or 10 days to pay the following invoices so they can control our actual amount, our payment within 30 days. But yes, the big challenge at this point in time is getting KG to believe that if they give us cash advance, we will be able to pay our payment outstanding for longer than 30 days, and we will be able to manage, because we have a system, and we've proved it in, we've been employed in government before, and we've proved it in our previous life, that it can be done, it has been done. And the cyber control and the centralization of everything, we will be able to manage to pay within 30 days. It's just a case of clearing our bad debt. And then again, listen to that we can and we will, once we pay for it, manage within the allocated budget. So of course, I mean, that they do sacrifice a certain department, but the intention going forward is to only spend money on your non-negotiables. So that, and we implement very extreme cost containment to do that, so that money is really spent only in hospitals and your clinics until such time that we can pass these really dark years.
I think that covers all the questions. I'm going to hand over back to you. Thank you. So I'm not sure if I don't think Honorable Mandela is really covered, because she imposed a question around the example, of course, for a specific example, like what that can be with the opposition.
I would have
understood
that if you indicate, in an area that isn't covered or that is absorbing if it's someone wants to complement or wants to add
Thank you, Jason, honorable members. Look, the reality is really that how you're going to cut for instance, without touching on the actual essential service delivery, as the CFO has said. The intention is really not to cut back and contain service delivery in our clinics, in our hospitals, and so on. An example, Jefferson, of what, and I think that's what I said earlier on, is really for us to step through our contractual obligations. And what we picked up as recently as today is around our housing leases, for instance. We have a number of leases of housing to accommodate supposedly doctors. But what we picked up for us in one district in Upington, we have 56 leases of houses. And already we have picked up 5 of those houses, ranging between 5 and 14,000 rand per month that are vacant, but the department has been paying. And the department pays at 2 levels. The department pays at provincial level and also in the district. The district is also paying for the same houses. So those are the areas where we really zooming in for us to almost like pick up on the wastage, to close the gap where there's leaks in the gaps. So those are the areas on the budget, and this is but one example. Like we said, we are busy, and so we can go on. Simple things like, for instance, you would have a security contract, which would be around 5 million per month for security services. But there is no controls that you are sure that on every month when you pay that 5 million rand that you pay for the number of the securities that must be on duty and so on and so forth, and the actual services that are delivered. Because there's nothing that comes back the assurance in terms of when my invoice comes. For me to pay as the department from the service provider, there is a list of, or rather the record, supporting documentation that informs the payment. So it's those areas, Honorable Chairperson, that claim we are really going to zoom in to loosen up the money that we can begin to. Honorable Chairperson, it's unbelievable that in the Northern Cape, An example was cited of the department paying for a house, to lease a house, 68,000 rand a month in the Northern Cape. Those are some of the examples, Honourable Chairperson and members, that we can cite. So it's really for us to identify where in the critical service delivery areas, you find that the procurement of essentials like surgical, for instance, the department would pay 300 rand for something that actually costs 30 or 15 rand. You know, that kind of thing. And those are the real cases that we begin up on a person, and that's where we believe that we were able to loosen up the money for us to begin to really channel it, first and foremost, toward the accruals. And once we have dealt with the accruals, it means that money will then become available for actual service delivery. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. There was a question regarding the number of projects that are at the planning stage. It looks like all our projects are at the planning. We, 80% of our projects are currently on site. And of that particular percentage, the bigger projects that are taking a bigger chunk of our budget, 2016-17. And the planning processes that we were mentioning here, we finalizing the stages, will be going out on procurement stage soon. And these projects are planned to overlap in the next financial year.
In terms of the conditions of service, Chairperson, we are being guided by the lodgement for the Department of Labor, the ministerial determination that guides us in terms of the leave of the caregivers, their sick leave, and also their uniform. And then there's also a section that also says that we must also be well aware for them so that when they leave off from the NGO, then at least they can have something. Currently, we are paying them a stipend of 2,500 in the Northern Cape and also give them a bonus at the end of the year. And then the issue relating to why are we not now employing them, we are also waiting on the National Department of Health. I think slide 7 in our presentation here says that the National Department has not yet finalized the draft policy of critical regarding the work-based outreach team. So we are also waiting guidance from National Department of Health. But as a province, we have also sat down and looked at, as you can see from our slide, if we absorb them so as they are, how much would it cost us? But if we go according to the draft policy, the draft policy also guides us that at least in a ward we must have 10 in a ward. Currently they are working within households. I'm also trying to answer the question that relates to transport. They work in households and they are from that area. Let's say they are staying in my area, which is Khalishiwe in Blanchfield or Soban. So the caregivers that are working in that area would be from that area. The only thing that is not in the area would be the NGO, as also determined in our thing. Now our NGOs also report today to our team so that at least they sign the register, because that's also one of the requirements when we monitor them. And then from the NGO itself, before we transfer the stipends of the caregivers, we ensure that they submit us quarterly reports that tells us exactly what happens. What are the activities, because we do different things, as you could see, that some of them are TB tracers, some of them have got a combination of TB tracers, caregivers, lay counselors, etc. So in those reports, the reports are quite comprehensive, and they have to give us those reports before we transfer the stipend. And And then in terms as to how many are there with that particular NGO, we also ask them to provide us with a bank statement, because we transfer the money into the NGO's bank statement, and the NGO also does not pay directly. It also needs to pay to the account of these caregivers. So in that manner, we are able to get the bank statements. So all the documentation has been given to us on a quarterly basis so that we could pay the caregivers. Now, unfortunately, we do not have enough team leaders, as you can see in our as professional nurses. The 58 or 56 retired nurses that we are having are really not enough. But because they work in the area in which they stay, and usually in the area in which they stay, there's a clinic or a CAC. So the sister as a clinic also complements the retired nurses. Now, traveling is not a problem, in spite of us having vast experience. Instances because they are working within households and in the areas in which they live. Now, if they got to travel, for instance, a train to a certain point, the NGO is also in its administrative allocation. We do give them a little bit of money so that they can use for traveling to a certain point for training. And then, I can also just say, it was also mentioned in our presentation that in the Pisikasime district, which is our NHI district, we are having 38 teams, but we are also trying to roll out these teams as we are training them in the new syllabus of ward venture, so that they complete phase one, they complete phase two, they do their practical, then they qualify as mid-level workers. And then when NHI is ready with the policy, we will already be having a cadre of mid-level workers who could be absorbed into our system. Thank you, Chair.
Ms.
Well, also on ideal training, it was asked specifically the percentage that are ideal. Now, currently, there are 3 out of the 164 ideal, which is 2.5%. But as was indicated also in the slide, there were also some facilities that just need some vital equipment to retain that status. And in the previous financial year, in 15-16, the average percentage for the clinic that was actually targeted for the year was already at 78%. There were actually a challenge with all vital equipment that was needed for them to get to ideal clinic status. So while we are busy with that process, identifying the needs, starting to purchase the process, we actually envisage quite rapid improvement in those factors. And also in the Big Sikasemi district, which is a pilot site, the average percentage is currently at 66%, and that's for all the clinics. So there's already a number of clinics with quite high scores, as we've indicated, about 70%. So if they receive the vital equipment and some other measures, we see that they can move quite fast. There is also specifically in the PCPCME, we use the NHI grant to assist with purchasing of some of the vital equipment, and we will also look at other ways of funding specifically to the other grants to assist with purchasing of equipment in the other districts. And then the question about facility managers, I think my colleague can actually assist also there from District Health Services, but that was specifically one of the commitments also from the department to address the issue of facility managers, because there were many vital posts for facility managers. There were a number now appointed, and the idea is that facility managers must be appointed in all health facilities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, NCA, Honorable Chairperson and members. I will start with the point that has been left by my colleague around the facility managers. Indeed, we are sitting with a situation where all the districts have done their submissions
for the appointment, the permanent appointment of operational managers. The only snag that we have for those facilities where there has been attrition, especially the expenditure on compensation of employees, is for one body as we stand currently. It's showing us that we have got very little room to add additional expenditure or a burden on the COE budget, especially when we are looking at the issue of filling the critical post. I am going to link the sentence with the input that is given by the HOD about the prioritization process. Of the 704 posts that we as a department have shifted through the entire need, 477, very close to 480, for the clinical side of the services. And we have already finished doing the submission because the moratorium document from Treasury does make it clear that although there is a moratorium generally, the department has to undertake a process of making a special submission that must go right up to the level of Treasury and the higher structures within the province for consideration for these posts to be filled. And indeed, our HR section has packaged that submission or that request to be forwarded to Treasury for consideration. So in other words, whilst indeed we do have a burden on the COE, the process that the HOD has outlined of moving budget around and also identifying the areas of inefficiencies within our systems and processes, once we have freed those monies, either lost through over costing or over pricing or theft or losses, whichever way the department is incurring these, that money or that pot of money, the department will now have a look at how to direct it where the main need is, and of course the operational managers will be accommodated as a result of that exercise, as well as the rest of the critical clinical post, the 480 or around there that already we have presented about. About the question of why the department is not using WISEN and whether the exercise has been undertaken. Indeed, the exercise has been undertaken within the province, although we have not finished all the facilities, but the majority of facilities have done the exercise according to the normative guidelines that were provided to all the provinces by the National Department of Health. So we are not at this point in time, Chairperson, able to comply with the WISEN norms. We understand that they are showing us where we must go as a province. However, we don't have the muscle at the moment to conform to the WISEN norms for the reasons that already have been explained. The last question that I will address, and I'm not sure, Chairperson, indeed it was a question from the Honourable Member, Honourable Ndaba, about blood running in the streets, you seem to know. However, just to not leave it hanging, there was an article in the media a few months, maybe last year, towards the end of last year, about one of our hospitals in John Dowlo Highway, at the Kurman Hospital, to be specific. And in that article, it was alleged that there was blood running from the mortuary into the streets
of Kuruma. We have since corrected the impression that was created that indeed was blood. It was not blood. What had happened was that because of the volume of autopsies that were being done at the mortuary at the time, the drainage system was overflowing outside of the mortuary, so it was more bloody water than it was blood, and it was secondly not in the streets of Kuruman, but it was within the compound of the hospital, but in the internal roads behind the mortuary that the bloody water was running. And the problem was addressed immediately in the days that followed and had since been addressed. It is obvious though that the reputation, our reputation was punished a little through that report, and we are still bearing the effects of that. Thank you.
No, thank you.
There's something that I wanted to mention, you can't fly like me.
Thank you, Honorable Jefferson. Last briefly on, I think what is really a concern amongst members is the issue of the abolishment of the post and the effect thereon on service delivery. Just to explain, Honorable Chairperson, abolishment of the post from the establishment does not mean the post disappears totally. The reality of the matter is we have an organogram and then we have an establishment that is per shell, our personnel and salary administration system, of which the Treasury, National Treasury and Department of Public Service and Administration are the joint custodians. Now, in terms of a public service and administration directive, only posts that are funded and vacant must reflect on the post establishment as a person. So any post that is unfunded and vacant should not reflect. But there's no prospect of you having money to fill that post at any given point of time. Such that you would have your post on the organogram, you would remove it from the payroll if it's not vacant or decision has been taken that this post should not or cannot be filled, it's therefore vacant and unfunded and it's then abolished. It does not mean that post disappears. As soon as you have the money to fill the post is recreated on your establishment and you can immediately continue to then fill the post. What happened in this instance is that we had a huge vacancy rate, which technically would have been an inaccurate reflection on the vacancy rate of the department, exactly because the majority of the posts that were included in our vacancy rate or that construed our vacancy rate would then have been the unfunded vacant posts. With regards to the, so that's how the 1,606 posts then were taken off our establishment because they are unfunded. But in order for us to achieve or to arrive at a decision as to which posts to abolish, we went then through this exercise, that's it. If for argument's sake we have a post, or 10 posts that are clerical posts in the province, say for instance HR or finance, or facilities management, or one of those ordinary, not critical, so to speak, posts at the provincial level that are funded according to our establishment on PERSA. And here on our, we have also on the establishment posts that are vacant and unfunded that might be critical for arguments that a nurse and nurses post in the clinic or wherever in the family.
then we would have said, instead of abolishing the nursing post, we trade them off for the clerk post, and therefore abolish the clerk post, but retain them the nursing post so that we can fund, basically ship the funds, and fund the clerk post to be able then to fund the nursing post, and retain them the nursing post on your post establishment. And that's how we arrived at the 734, basically. So the 704 posts are there for the critical posts. 400 clinical and the 200 non-clinical, so to speak, the utmost support, which would include, like the Honourable Member has said, indicated, the cleaner sites, the portal sites, those admin support posts that are critical for service delivery. That's exactly how we arrived at the 704 posts. So none of the posts that we would have abolished would have just disappeared, you know, without thorough thinking as to whether they are critical or not critical. Thank you,
gentlemen. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to respond to the very first question around the issue of air ambulance services, where mention was made that there is money paid, but there are no numbers that really verify whether the money was properly used or even any benefit from the money or paid for money. We'll understand, sir, that the service providers for ambulances will normally charge you what they call availability fee. Sometimes you have a plane staying there maybe for 6 months at least, depending on if there are any cases. So what I instructed the HOD and the team to do is to look at the possibility, you know, of if we cannot have, maybe depending on the advice from federal and the national office, also the Department of Health nationally, of having service providers who are available as and when needed. You know, maybe have a database of 35 service providers who will be available. In an event, don't get this one, then we take this one. To avoid the situation where we pay for a plane that they're not using. Like for example, we pay in the region of about 800,000 for availability. And immediately when you use it, then the money, they charge for service provider. So we are trying to avoid. Hence, our optimism in terms of saying, we are with you that we will save some money somewhere if we can be able to run a cash contract. And also, by the way, what the issue you mentioned around your housing issues, we didn't hesitate. We terminated some of those contracts. That we are with, we are not really assisting the department. It was kind of houses that are not used, but we are paying for them. So those are some of the measures that we have taken to ensure that we have more money in the department. The last one is around the issue of your consequences around the creditors or targets. You'll understand also that my professor did appoint the team at some point, special investigation task team, which task was precisely to investigate all the other situations that have been alleged in the province. So we will be receiving a report very soon. But also to say that there are officials who are frustrated and are going through the proper disciplinary process to ensure that people don't take things for chance. You get away with murder and nothing is happening. So we are, Honourable Matter, trying to address the issue of consequences for those who are found to have put their hands in the cookie. Thank you very much, sir.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Sorry, I just, it's really important because this speaks to the constitutional right, 2073, and I hear everything he says is what he's saying, but the question is, are air ambulance services currently fully operational in the Northern Cape? That is the question.
Thank you, MSC, thank you, Honourable Chair and members. I can say that, yes, unfortunately, the department was a participant in an RD contract. this RT contract was recently terminated by National Treasury. So this situation is not only affecting Northern Cape, it's affecting all other provinces as well. So what National Treasury has advised provinces to do is to use the deviation procedures to procure ambulance services. So this is what they're planning to do.
I think it
has
been a long day, but a long day that has a from province to province that has exposed us to a number of issues. It is not the end, but the beginning of our interaction. We may have some questions that we may not have been comfortable or we have not been responded to in terms of expectations. You can tell us in silence. The members will request that and then you send them to him. We will obviously we will go to our program, decide when to go to Northern Cape for an oversight, vast as it is, I know. But we are happy. The final thing is that there was water that came out of a hospital as well. Whether it was bloodstained, whether it was whatever, it might happen that you have really been honest and open to us because it talked to maintenance. It talked to maintenance, how our institutions are being maintained, and we hope that that has been corrected. We know that in Arlington, we have got a state of the art institution. I got a call from a resident of Northern Cape that I've never seen, I don't know yet, from a bar of soap. He was so insistent about the situations that are happening in Northern Cape. I didn't take five, but we'll see what. So I'm saying, we are all institutions, all provinces are tasked with responsibilities. They differ from one province to another. We don't want to be referred to other provinces. We want to focus. Because Northern Cape is different from Free State. Free State is different from. You are the same province. And the three are coming tomorrow. So it is not an exercise that we are taking very lightly. Because it's an exercise, as the said, I don't know if I should say that if the infrastructure is not up to scratch, there's nothing that can happen. But if the infrastructure is up to scratch, every country then sits in. Because at the end, it's about the community that communities are going to own. And the responsibility of us as public representatives and the responsibility of yourselves as officials led by the NEC and the Premier, we have got that responsibility of ensuring that we can the guide. It is not going to be easy, but it is dedication because we are addressing a leader. You will know better in the Northern Cape. I'm from the Eastern Cape. We are coming from different provinces, which are rural, others are urban, and whatever. Majority of us here are health workers. Majority, some of us in the community led in the sphere of health in the provinces we work. So we are talking about a subject matter health that is passionate to us. And we will always ask the leadership of the province. But maybe we may be asking trivial or small questions, but it is those questions that make or break any health institution. So I would like to have maybe some time, if I understood you when you were saying, because I believe that without a border, without a drug, without a general system, we never have a picture an ideal clinic or an institution. Sometimes they be very specialist
then Mrs. Mendez, but you can never perform an oath in the DNA Casino Legislature. You can never, she can give treatment to a patient whose stomach is empty. So I will have to, but in this time of analysis, all these endeavors is that we are to change the face of the health center in this country. And we are in a vote pass who want to all are happy and we want to accept that the discussion health insurance is the ultimate goal, whereas the road is not going to be serviced. Thank you very much. Unfortunately, there's no supper. We are going to move. Some of us are going to sleep with a cup of coffee. You are very well going to enter. We have been here the whole day. But before the five, we leave at the just as we go, I'd like to speak to yourself and the HMG. Thank you very much, honorable members. Our committee will be taking the agenda tomorrow morning. We are here at 9 o'clock. Thank you.